She kept his temper in check. If this were a case he was handling, he'd get tough with C.S. But none of this was official, and his sister-in-law liked the guy. At least for now, he'd give C.S. a pass. While he waited for Darlene at the studio door, Chi called Caitlin Vigil's office number again, and wasn't surprised to get a recorded message that the office was closed. He punched the right numbers to leave a message. The Pantry, the family-owned diner close to downtown Santa Fe where he and Darlene were supposed to eat the night before, was Jim Chi's kind of place. Darlene had the stuffed sopaipilla, and London ordered chicken fried steak. Chi asked for the steak and enchilada plate. While they waited for the food to arrive, Darlene, usually talkative, drank her water and looked out the window. London carried the conversation.
"What's it like to be a cop?"
The question caught Chi off guard.
"I really enjoy it, at least most shifts, most days. It's a chance to help make the world a little better. And it's how I met Bernie, the sister of your roommate here, the gal I married."
"My dad was in the Marines. He said he was glad he served, but I think being in the military or being a cop would be kind of scary. One of those guys who hangs with C.S., Herbert something, he told me he was in the Marines too, like my dad. He seems mean."
Darlene said, "You're saying that because they wouldn't buy you any wine."
"No, I'm not."
The waitress came with the food. The girls ate with gusto, and Chi savored the first delicious bites. Then his phone rang. He didn't recognize the number, but he hoped it was Caitlin.
"Excuse me a minute. I have to take this."
He walked away from the table.
"Sergeant Chi, I'm sorry if I sounded rude at the office, but I have to keep my personal life, well, personal. Have you heard from George?"
"No."
He explained again why he was calling.
"Oh, I thought you had some news for me."
Her voice lost its cheerfulness.
"George left the Pueblo about 3 weeks ago for a ranch job someplace out in the boonies with no phone service. The boss told him he had enough work for a couple weeks solid, and we can use the money. After that, George told me he was going to his mother's house. He hadn't seen her for a while, and that he'd call when he got a chance. He hasn't called, and I'm worried."
She took a breath. Chi could practically hear her thinking.
"I assumed he was still working, or that he decided to stay with his mother and didn't have the guts to tell me."
She didn't offer anything else. Chi said,
"His mother told my co-worker she hadn't seen him. She thought he was with you. She told him you two had separated."
"Separated? You mean like getting a divorce?" "That's a joke. I'm not the easiest person to get along with, and then there's my mother. But Curly is sweet, patient, funny. He's not the most ambitious guy on the planet, but he has a big heart."
"Do you know where he's working?"
"Not exactly."
"When did you last see him?"
"He left early the day after our feast day dances."
She gave him the date.
"You know about that?"
"A little. I'm Navajo, too."
"I figured you were. Anyway, Curly helped with the feast day meal. He made the grocery run, set up all the extra tables, and even cleaned up afterward."
"Was that the last you saw him?"
"Yes. My mother told me she scolded him about not working hard enough that night, and they had a big argument. Curly had planned to leave in the morning, but he jumped in the truck and drove off. I know he's busy, but I'm worried. And now the police are involved."
She stopped talking, and he heard a muffled sob.
"If you can give me the name of the place he went to work, I'll get someone to find out if George Curly is still out there. The rookie, Chi thought, can do the research."
"All I remember is that he said it was west of here, maybe out by El Moro."
"Did he mention the name of the man who hired him?"
"I don't remember. I don't think so."
Why, Chi wondered,
did a job that should have been easy turn out to be full of complications. He waited for Caitlin to end the call, but instead she said something that surprised him.
George's mother resents me because I'm not Navajo, she said. I think she's using you Navajo cops to get my goat. I think George might be with her, and she's talked him into leaving me. Not only that, he's got our new truck. I made last month's payment on it, and now it's his turn.
Why don't you ask his mother if he's there?
I don't have her number, and even if I did, she won't talk to me.
So you don't know where George is working, is that right?
All I know is that he was hired to do a ranch job out in Cibola County or somewhere like that.
Has he left without staying in touch before?
No, never. Not even when my mother told him to get out. He still telephoned.
I think it's time to do a missing person report. I'm going to ask you some questions. Let's start with what he looks like.
He's 36. About 5'5" with his boots on, 130. Black hair cut short and a scar on his right forearm from getting burned. Kind of ordinary except for his great smile. I've got some photos.
We might want that. Was he on any medication?
No, and aspirin once in a while.
Any jewelry he might have on?
He wears a gold wedding band with our initials on the inside.
What is he driving?
Our new Ford pickup, white.
She asked her to call friends who might have seen him and start spreading the news that George was missing. Ma'am, when I learn anything about him, I'll get back to you. Will you do the same? She answered before he even finished speaking.
Call my cell or text me. If I'm at work, I'll slip away and call you back.
She gave him the number.
George and I had our differences, but I know he loved me. Even if his mother coerced him into going back to Shiprock, he'd call and tell me he was all right. He's not that much of a coward.
Chi returned to the table and picked up his fork. He felt the girls watching him. Don't worry about it. I'm doing a favor for a friend. He hadn't thought of the rookie as a friend, but he must be because, in a pinch, he knew the guy would have his back. They enjoyed dinner, and the girls ordered dessert and chattered about school. Chi was glad Darlene had made a friend, but he couldn't get C.S. and Herbert out of his mind. He pushed the last of his food away and looked at London. Do you know why Herbert is at the studio with C.S.? No. London reached for a sopapilla. Chi turned to Darlene. Did C.S. talk to you about any of this?
He said he only has use of the studio until the end of the week, and that Herbert is helping him. It's the video about the lady and the sheep, remember? I'm doing some extra shots, too, some transitions.
Your arm looks better. How did you get that bruise?
It was an accident. I don't want to talk about it.
She told me the same thing, London said. I noticed it after she went to that party.
Shut up about that.
What party?
Just a party.
Chi hoped the pressure of two people wanting an answer would stir Darlene to say more, but she focused on the last of her flan. Before they left for the drive back to campus, Chi called the substation in Shiprock and told Wilson Sam about his conversation with George Curley's wife. Caitlin says George Curley isn't with her. She hasn't seen him for about 3 weeks, but they aren't legally separated. She thinks George's mother knows more than she told you, and that she's just using the police to get her goat. Ask Mrs. Curley if she knows the name of the place where he went to work so Caitlin can talk to him. The rookie chuckled. I'll ask her. She's a feisty one. She reminds me of an older version of Bernie. She swears George is at the Pueblo, and Caitlin won't let the guy call back to Navajo land out of pure meanness. He's a grown man, isn't he? But even as he said it, Chi felt a little sympathy for George Curley. 10. Bernie pushed Merrily Cruz's doorbell and waited.
When she wasn't able to reach Merrily on the phone, she'd hoped that Largo would decide that someone on the search team or other law enforcement in the area could tell Ms. Cruz that her brother was missing. But mostly because Merrily served on the Wings and Roots Board of Directors, and therefore was part of the Walker problem, Largo ordered Bernie to go to Grant's to do the job. Cooper supplied the address and the information that the woman worked at home. Bernie hated delivering bad news. While this wasn't the worst news, it was far from the best. An attractive 40-ish woman came to the door. She was wearing a dress that hugged her curves without being overtly sexy, and a necklace of green turquoise, old and expensive.
"Are you Miss Cruz?"
"Yes."
"My name is Officer Bernadette Manuelito. I'm with the Navajo Police. I need to talk to you about Domingo Cruz."
"Oh my God, did something happen?" The woman stepped back from the open door.
"Come in, please."
The door opened onto an elegant entry hall, furnished with a small marble table and a large framed black and white photograph of petroglyphs. In the living room beyond, Bernie saw contemporary leather couches, graceful lamps and end tables, several more petroglyph photos, and a storm-pattern Navajo rug on top of white carpet. The house looked neat, comfortable, and expensive, more so than Bernie would have expected from the modest exterior. She felt as if she was inside one of those home-living magazines.
"Sit down."
The woman waved Bernie to an upholstered chair and sat across from her.
"What happened? Is he dead?"
"Ms. Cruz, take a breath. Your brother is missing, and New Mexico Search and Rescue has volunteers out now looking for him. They are good at what they do. Domingo is your brother, correct?"
"Yes, my twin. What happened?"
"He was working with a Wings and Roots group in El Malpais. He went out to find a young woman who hadn't returned from her solo, and he never came back to base camp."
"I don't understand."
Bernie eased forward on the couch to place her feet firmly on the floor.
"Do you know about his work?"
"Yes, of course. I'm on the program's board of directors. I mean, I don't understand how this happened. Dom loves
that part of New Mexico, and he knows it well. He wouldn't get lost. What happened to the girl? Is she lost, too?"
"Luckily, the girl made her way back to camp. She's fine." Merrily leaned forward toward Bernie, elbows on her knees.
"I'm shocked. Dom is so good outdoors."
"The incident commander was wondering if you had any information about your brother that might help them find him."
"Have they talked to that Cooper woman, the program coordinator? She usually goes with the groups."
Bernie nodded. "Mrs. Cooper mentioned that your brother seemed preoccupied on this trip, worried about something. I decided I should talk to you in person, rather than try to discuss this over the phone." Merrily settled back into her chair.
"How can I help?"
"Was your brother depressed?"
"You mean suicidal? You've got to be kidding. If Dom had something on his mind, so what? It hasn't been easy for him the last few years. He's totally committed to the program, and Wings and Roots has shown marvelous results. That man has changed lives."
She studied her hands for a moment, and then looked back at Bernie.
"He's also our main fundraiser, and that's taking up more of his time. After their initial enthusiasm, many of our funders seem to have moved on. Begging for money is hard, and Dom told me he was ready to do something else. But he'd never kill himself."
"I have to ask, because the search protocol for finding a person at risk of taking his own life is different. Can you think of anything else that could relate to Mr. Cruz's disappearance?"
Bernie heard an electronic sound that resembled a bird call.
Merrily glanced at her phone and silenced it.
"Well, he likes to take photographs out there, but he never does it on company time. Did Cooper mention whether he had his camera with him?"
"I'd have to check my notes." Bernie remembered Counselor Walker's rant. "Tell me more about the fundraising."
"The board is finding a contractor to do an audit in preparation for Cooper's pending retirement."
Bernie heard the bird call again. Merrily paused, pulled her phone from her pocket and switched it off.
Sorry. Did Mrs. Cooper mention that she planned to retire?
Not directly, but I heard that she recommended your brother for the job.
That's right. That was on his mind. In addition to the audit, another agency will conduct a comprehensive follow-up study to see what's become of the students we worked with in terms of completing high school and further education, their living situation, contacts with the criminal justice system, employment, and other criteria. We have a lot of anecdotal evidence that the program helps participants with decision-making and resisting peer pressure, but the empirical study will help juice up our fundraising. Talking about the study seemed to animate the woman more than discussing the search for her brother. Merrily stood. I need a glass of water and an aspirin. I'll be right back. There are some cookies on the counter in the kitchen and some bottled water there, too. Please help yourself.
She disappeared down the hall. Like the rest of the house, the immaculate kitchen looked like something out of a design magazine. It had a sparkling stainless steel stove with a built-in grill in the center, a refrigerator taller than Bernie, countertops that looked like pale green marble with veins of mica or something shiny, and a smooth wooden block with slots for knives. Pans of all sizes and functions were neatly arranged on an overhead rack. A bright red ceramic jug filled with big spoons, spatulas, and utensils Bernie didn't recognize sat on the counter. She examined the little pots of fresh herbs, chives, thyme, tarragon, oregano, parsley, and even sage, arranged on a decorative stand. Sage. The sage in the pot had the same name as the wild plant that grew prolifically in New Mexico, on the Navajo Nation, and throughout the Southwest. She knew the culinary sage in the kitchen was cousin to peppermint, catnip, and oregano, all characterized by square stems and aromatic leaves. The sagebrush outside had daisies, asters, and ragweed in its close family ties. Same name, but different genetics. Then she thought of the new FBI person, Sage Johnson. Were her parents thinking of sagebrush or cooking when they named her? Or did they expect she'd be a wise woman, a different sort of sage? The name made her curious. For a person who liked to cook, someone like Chi, this kitchen with its fresh herbs and fancy equipment would be paradise. Mama enjoyed fixing meals too, but Bernie couldn't imagine her in such fancy and complicated surroundings. Mama had her favorite pot, her special knives, and a temperamental old stove that did the job just fine. Merrily's cookies, shaped like hearts, sat on a plate with "Eat Up" scrolled in designer script around its edge. Bernie took one. It looked like a sugar cookie, but it had little purple bits inside. She tried a bite. The unusual taste reminded her of something her husband might take a fancy to. She needed a napkin and opened a drawer beneath the counter. They were there, along with some coffee pods, those fancy little capsules that only made one cup of coffee at a time, and a small plastic bag filled with seeds. Bernie had little bags like that in her house, too, waiting for spring so she could plant them and see if whatever wildflower had caught her fancy would grow in her yard along the river. The large photographs in the living room drew Bernie's attention. As she walked toward them, she heard Merrily's voice from the back of the house, raised in anger.
"This isn't the time to talk about that. Dom is missing."
A pause, and then, "Oh, for God's sake, give it a rest." The house fell silent. The photos captured an assortment of images carved or pecked into black rock that looked like lava. Bernie recognized Kokopelli, the water sprinkler and fertility symbol. She saw spirals in another photo, in perfect light to make them pop against the dark textured background. A misshapen tree in the background reminded her of the pinon Annie had used as a landmark. The dining room table held a stack of books, illustrated nonfiction volumes on Southwestern archaeology, Indian pottery from various tribes, and rock art of the desert, and an auction house catalog with a Plains Indian parflesh on the cover. Bernie picked up the catalog and was thumbing through it when Merrily returned. "Your brother is a wonderful photographer,"
Bernie said. He could be in a book.
That's what I think, too. A man I know offered to fund a book project in exchange for using Dom's photos on his website. He always wanted to know exactly where the picture was taken, and Dom kept records so the places could be protected. We were moving along, and then after about a year, Dom told me he didn't want his photos up there on the website. That funding fell through. But I'm committed to the project.
Why didn't Dom want to be part of it anymore?
Merrily studied her hands. He went back to a spot he'd photographed earlier for more shots of the spiral in different light. He told me that someone had been digging near there, disturbing what might have been a burial cave. I tried to talk him out of being so angry, to explain that it might just be coincidence. She motioned Bernie to the couch, as before, and sat back down in the chair.
I'm worried about Dom. He knows that country. I'm afraid something bad has happened to him. He may have fallen in the lava and hurt himself and gotten trapped, or been attacked by an animal or had a heart attack. I thought of something else, too. I hope you won't think I'm nutty.
Go ahead.
I wonder if somebody was after him because they wanted the program to fail, and they ambushed him out there.
Who would want the program to fail?
There are the campers who got kicked out for breaking the rules, staff who were fired, rejected job applicants. There's a woman on the Navajo Nation Council who wants to shut us down. She took a swallow of water from a glass she'd brought from the bedroom. Maybe even other non-profits who offer similar programs. If we go under, they get our clients and our funding. People think that way.
Back up a little. You said fundraising had become more of a challenge. Is the program in financial trouble?
Merrily shifted in the chair. I can't talk about that. None of this may be relevant to why Dom is missing. And getting back to your earlier question, even if the program were bankrupt, he wouldn't kill himself. He never took the easy way out.
Do you know Elsbeth Walker?
Only by reputation. She's making some unfounded accusations against us. Bernie hoped Merrily would elaborate, but she didn't.
You mentioned some financial issues, she said after a few moments. Are they what Counselor Walker is asking about?
Merrily focused on the spotless white carpet. It's complicated. Our lawyer or the board treasurer would be the people to talk to about that. She rose and strode into the kitchen with long steps. Bernie followed. Merrily opened a drawer, extracted paper and a pen, and jotted something down.
You can ask Mayfair for the phone numbers.
She handed the list to Bernie.
I noticed your little bag of seeds. I do that, too, with wildflowers.
Those are brugs.
Brugs?
Brugmansias.
Bernie tried to remember.
Big flowers, right?
That's right. They bloom in a lot of great colors, and they love the warmth and humidity of the greenhouse. I'll give you some seeds if you'd like to try growing some. Do you want to see them?
Not today. I'd love to take a look at your plants sometime, but I have another piece of business to discuss. Are there other relatives I should notify about Dom?
No.
No?
Most Navajos had a directory full of relatives.
Dom and I were adopted. Raised off the reservation, I think because we were twins. You've heard some of those old stories.
I have. One popular belief among the people was that twins bring good luck. After all, the hero twins born to changing woman made the world safe for people. However, Bernie had also heard that twins were shameful, caused by a woman having intercourse with two men. And apart from any traditional views, having two babies to care for certainly added to a family's stress. Merrily picked up a photo in a silver frame of two preteen Navajo children and showed it to Bernie.
We went separate ways after high school, like a lot of kids do. Our adoptive parents died a couple of years ago, and Dom and I started rebuilding our relationship. I took the lead, partly because I went through a program similar to Wings and Roots, but for adults, you know. It helped me get my head on straight after my husband died. That's why I wanted to help Wings and Roots when Dom told me about it.
She put the photo back on the table.
You asked about people to notify that he's missing? There's Michael Franklin, the guy he lives with in Shiprock. Franklin has a little house outside Grant's in San Rafael, but I don't think he's there much. I'm sure he already knows, but I'll give you his number.
She jotted it down on a slip of paper as she spoke.
The kids in the program are Dom's real family. Before my husband Roger died, Dom was always after me to make him an uncle.
She handed Bernie the number.
How long will they continue to search?
I can't answer that. They look until they decide there are no more places to search.
And then what?
Bernie sighed.
Then there's nothing much to do except wait.
Wait?
For the person to show up, for some new information, or for the body to be found.
Do you think my brother is alive out there?
They say he knows the area better than anyone. He has wilderness training. Someone on the search will call you when they find him.
Even if he doesn't survive?
Bernie nodded.
Even if it's bad news, at least you'll know.
Merrily rose from the couch. I have a client in 15 minutes. Thanks for stopping by to tell me about Dom in person.
Bernie stood, too.
What do you do?
I'm a psychologist. I started my practice after Roger died, so it's still in its infancy. I also sell art on the Internet, mostly Dom's photos.
Could I take a picture of that photo of the spiral petroglyph?
Bernie removed her cell phone from her pack.
It's beautiful, and I'd like to show my husband.
That's one of my favorites, too. I have an extra print. You can have it. My gift. What's your address?
You can send it to the station. That would be great.
Bernie took a business card from her backpack, jotted something on the back, and gave it to the woman.
I wrote my cell number on there, and the number for the search team. Please call if you hear from your brother, or if you think of something that would help with finding him. And thanks again for the photograph. And the cookie.
Lacey Mayfair, one of the people Dom works with, made them. She's interested in herbs, and I showed her some plants I'm cultivating in the greenhouse. She added some lavender to these as an experiment. Dom adored them. Last time he was here, he gobbled them up. That man loves homemade cookies.
Bernie felt the cool air on her skin as she walked to her unit, wondering why people had to experiment with something already good like cookies. Before she climbed into the car, she took the cookie out of her pocket and crumbled it onto the frozen ground for the birds. Then she radioed into the station to let Sandra know she was on her way back.
Counselor Walker has called twice for you, and the captain wants you to talk to this guy, Michael Franklin, ASAP. The search coordinator referred Franklin to us because he was so upset when he called them. He started talking to those Bilaganas in Navajo, and then he started crying over the phone.
Bernie called Franklin from her car.
Mr. Franklin, this is Officer Bernadette Manuelito.
Oh, thank the Lord. They found him.
No, sir, but the search is continuing.
I've been worried sick when he didn't come home, didn't call. I remembered those folks who just disappeared out there, and then years later their bodies.
He trailed off.
Dom sees snakes, coyotes, bears. I told him a million times that he worked too hard, didn't take care of himself. But did he listen? No. He thinks he's indispensable, indestructible, some kind of Superman. This time he scared me so badly I called his boss, and she told me he was lost. Lost! Out there somewhere in the lava.
He went out to find a girl who he thought might be in trouble. I'm sure he didn't mean to do anything to upset you.
She heard a long exhale over the phone line and then Franklin's voice, softer this time.
I know. I'm scared for him. Can I do something to help? I could answer the phone, bring food, anything.
Well, sir, why don't you contact the incident commander? Maybe she needs a volunteer. They're set up at the Narrows campground, the place where the Wings and Roots crew had camped.
The Narrows? Where is that?
Just off New Mexico 117 on the edge of the Malpais, southeast of Grants. Sir, Do you know if Mr. Cruz was depressed or upset about anything when he left on this trip?
A pause, and then, no more than usual these days. Poor Dom. The program is having money problems, and the board wants him to become the director. That sister of his is always asking for just one more photo for the book. He's hard on himself, such a perfectionist. That one more photo becomes a huge production, and he stays in touch with some of the kids in the program. If they fail, he feels like he has failed too. He used to love that job, but I think he was ready for a change. Franklin gasped. I mean, he is ready.
As Bernie crossed the McKinley County line, she thought about what Michael Franklin had said about Cruz's sister. Marilee must share her brother's fondness for the wild black landscape of the Malpais. In a house kept simple, his photos had a place of honor. Thinking of sisters brought her own sister to mind. Darlene answered after five rings.
Hey, what's up?
Hey there, glad I caught you.
Sorry I haven't called, it's been crazy busy.
How's the program going?
It's fun, but it's kind of hard.
Darlene sounded distracted. Mama has been trying to reach you.
You said that in your text. She called me at 6 a.m., for goodness sakes, and acted hurt that I didn't have much to say to her when I was barely awake. I've talked to her every day I've been here. What's up with her?
Are you sure? Darlene laughed.
She says the same thing every conversation. Do you have enough to eat there, and when are you coming home? She never wants to talk long, but she's always been like that on the phone. I wonder why she doesn't remember.
Bernie looked at the long train headed west on the tracks to the right, and the stair steps of red mesas behind them. How are your teachers?
One of them is great. One is good, and the last one, well, she talks too much, but she's okay. Better than anybody I had in high school.
How's C.S.?
He's fine, except he's always working.
Darlene sounded as if she were going to say something else, but instead she asked,
How are you?
Fine. Working as usual.
Did the cheeseburger send you the photos of my drawings?
Not yet.
He better, or I'll have to punch him.
Bernie ended the call with more questions than answers, as was often the case in conversations with Darlene. Turning away mentally from the drama, she focused on the scenery. She was crossing the Continental Divide, the point at which water sheds on one side to the east, toward the Atlantic Ocean, and on the other to the west, flowing into the Pacific. She passed an elk crossing sign, refineries, and the exit for Yonbito, the little Navajo town at the base of the red sandstone cliffs. She decided to call Lieutenant Leaphorn next. She tried his cell phone first, and when that went instantly to message, she dialed the landline. A woman's voice answered.
Hi, Luisa, it's Bernie.
She liked Leaphorn's housemate, but she never quite knew what to say to her. Now that Luisa had resumed the research she had set aside to help the lieutenant recover, conversation might be easier.
How are you?
I'm okay,
she heard the fatigue in Luisa's voice.
How are you?
Fine.
You sound a little distracted.
Well, I'm driving west on I-40, and the traffic is starting to pick up. It's been a crazy day.
Be careful out there. Is your mother well?
Yes.
She always asks about you and the lieutenant.
Mama's questions amounted to,
Is Lieutenant Leaphorn still living with that Bilagana?
Followed by a click of her tongue. Mama might forget that she'd talked to Darlene, but she remembered Luisa. Before Bernie could switch the topic to Luisa herself or the lieutenant, Luisa said,
And how's Darlene? I hope she's staying out of trouble.
My sister is in Santa Fe this week. She enrolled in a sort of trial program at that art school she thinks she might be interested in. I spoke with her and she's enjoying it.
So what's bothering you?
When Bernie first met Luisa, she'd been disturbed by the woman's, well, call it forthrightness. Now she took it in stride. I called about a situation I'm dealing with at work. Is the lieutenant home?
Joe was taking a nap. I'll see if he's awake. Hold on.
Please, don't wake him. Louisa put the phone down with a thunk, a sound you couldn't get on a cell phone. Had she done it again? Hurt Louisa's feelings?
Joe Leaphorn's deep voice came on the phone.
Yate.
Yate.
Good to hear from you.
The lieutenant spoke fluently in Navajo, but the brain injury still affected his English. The irony made Bernie smile. She'd been told that Navajo was much harder to master, but obviously not if it was the language you'd learned as a child. The lieutenant had made remarkable progress, and now walked without a cane. Still, whenever she spoke with him, she remembered the awful day when she cradled his bleeding head in her lap. She started to share some office news involving a promotion and a retirement, but Leaphorn cut her off.
Manuelito, you don't call to chat. What can I do for you?
Well, sir, I was out in the Malpais. The New Mexico search and rescue folks have an operation underway, and I remember hearing about another search out there a few years before I came on the force. Were you involved in that?
A little.
Would you tell me about it?
Why?
The current situation bothers me, and I'm wondering if there's more to the story than a man getting lost.
The phone went silent as Leaphorn gathered his thoughts.
A Bilagana family disappeared. No, wait. Not the whole family. Only a father and daughter. They told the rest of the group they were going for a walk, only a half mile. A National Park Service archaeological team saw them that afternoon as they were leaving the parking lot, heading to the Big Tubes area. They never came back. SAR sent ground pounders, dogs, even a plane. As I recall, some 250 searchers worked the incident. Nothing. It was as if they had evaporated. Navajo PD got involved when a team discovered some old burial sites. My job was to check the restricted area to make sure the missing people hadn't come that way.
He paused. Unlike Chi and herself, she knew Leaphorn didn't believe in Chindis, the restless spirits of the dead who could cause trouble for the living. His skepticism, Bernie thought, made him the perfect officer for that assignment.
These were old burials, what we used to call Anasazi, and may have dated from the Chaco Canyon era. I didn't find the people, but I saw some of the most beautiful petroglyphs I've ever seen. I took photos of the art and some of the pottery preserved there.
Leaphorn talked on, describing the petroglyphs and the pottery in detail, and noting that the FBI had recently requested the old photos for a case they were working on.
8 years later, a Natural Resources survey crew came across some bones that looked human, scattered in a rough part of the monument, 5 miles away from where the father and daughter told the family they were headed. Turned out, they were the remains of those long-missing hikers. The two seemed to have followed an old trail and evidently got disoriented. No one knows for sure why they were so far from where they planned to go. It's rugged out there. They made some unfortunate decisions and suffered the consequences.
Leaphorn paused, indicating that the story was done.
Are you involved in something, Manuelito, or only curious?
Oh, some of each. I'm puzzled about a man who is missing out there now from a Wings and Roots program. You know, one of those deals where they send young people into the wilderness to get their heads on straight? He is an experienced wilderness guide. I have trouble believing he would somehow lose his way. I'm wondering if he doesn't want to be found, and why that might be, or if he's out there at all. I can't make sense of it.
This sounds like something Chi would be nosing around in, not you.
Bernie remembered how critical the lieutenant was of Chi's propensity to follow his gut rather than department rules.
I got involved a little because I talked to a girl who turned out to be the last person to see the missing man. It's a long story with some politics mixed in.
Office politics?
Even worse, tribal. The girl is the daughter of a member of the Navajo Tribal Council who wants to investigate Wings and Roots for misuse of Navajo funds. Domingo Cruz, the missing man, is the associate director of this group and the one in charge of their fundraising. Because I happen to be out there, the counselor thinks I'm involved in a cover-up.
Is this counselor named Elsbeth Walker?
Bernie said, yes, sir.
I've known her since she was a kid. She's like a porcupine, prickly on the outside.
Bernie laughed. I felt her spines, and I have to talk to her again soon about her charges against Wings and Roots.
I'll look in my files and send you some background information I should have on her. It might help you to get along with her a little better. I'll see what I can learn about the missing man, too.
Ahehe. She and I got off on the wrong foot.
You know what they say about politicians.
What do they say? Bernie heard some clatter in the background.
Just a minute.
She heard more noise and then muffled sounds, as though Leaphorn had put his hand over the receiver. After a few moments, he was back.
I'll email the information about Walker. Anything else?
His voice was now strictly business. I appreciate your help. Everything okay there?
Louisa says to tell you and she something.
He paused.
Come and see us.
He said the last four words in English. I will, sir. Because Leaphorn had not said everything was okay, she assumed it wasn't. Maybe the problem was nothing much, but she made a mental note to call again soon. Or better yet, stop by. 11. After dinner, Jim Chi drove Darlene and London back to campus, stopping at the same overlook where he and Darlene had watched the city lights flicker the night before. Darlene sat next to him on the bench seat and London by the door. What's up? London said. Why are we stopped here?
It's cool. He wants to give me another lecture.
Darlene turned to Chi.
Why do you keep badgering me about C.S.? I thought you liked him.
I don't like the secrecy, the bad company, not to mention the parties and the drinking. I tried to talk to C.S. about something important and he blew me off.
He's trying to finish that video. He's super stressed. What's the big deal, cheeseburger? Give the dude a chance.
London chimed in.
Don't be so hard on C.S. He's sensitive about his name. Just because he wanted to keep something a secret doesn't mean it's something bad.
Darlene nodded.
You're as bad as Mama and Sister. Maybe worse. I'm thinking of going to school away from Navajo so I won't have a million people bugging me. Stop being Sergeant Chi for once in your life.
This isn't about being a cop.
Even as he said it, he realized that wasn't true.
I mean, this isn't all about being a cop. Some of it, most of it, is about being a relative who cares about you. That's all.
Darlene's tone mellowed.
The video is all C.S. has left to finish before he can get his degree. You're only here because of me, so if you do something that gets him kicked out, it would be my fault, too. He probably hates me anyway because of your bugging him.
Or because of what happened last night?
London didn't wait for Darlene to answer.
That can happen to anybody. He'll get over it.
What happened? Chi waited. The girls looked at each other. Chi waited some more.
Can we go? London shifted in her seat. I've got an assignment I need to do for tomorrow.
Chi gave Darlene a gentle nudge with his elbow.
What happened?
He felt her shrug off the question. They sat a while longer. Chi felt the cold seep in and figured the temperature would work in his favor. Darlene sighed.
Okay. I asked C.S. to take me to this party I heard about from one of the girls in class. He didn't want to because he said he had to work, but Herbert said he'd drive me. A few people had too many drinks and things got crazy,
and Herbert drove me back to the dorm.
Were you drinking?
At first just a Coke, but then someone put some rum in it.
What else happened?
She threw up and had a headache in the morning, London said. It's cold in here. Can we go now?
What else happened? She asked again.
London shifted in her seat. My auntie always said girls are entitled to have a few secrets.
That depends on what the secret is.
Darlene pulled her coat around her more tightly.
Herbert drove me to the dorm and told me I was stupid to drink so much. Let's go.
She turned onto the road that led to the school entrance.
I can tell you're ashamed and embarrassed about what happened last night. Believe it or not, you'll feel better when you tell me about the bruise, too.
The campus dorm hadn't been restricted by the architectural regulations that govern the old neighborhoods of Santa Fe. Its open, modern look fit well with the site. From the outside, it reminded him of a modestly upscale hotel. A motley assortment of beater cars, little sedans, and old trucks filled the parking places closest to the dorm's entrance, with a few more expensive vehicles intermixed sporadically. She found a spot in the rear, a place darker than he liked, and walked with the girls to the door. Darlene had said nothing for most of the ride to campus, but now she took his arm.
Why don't you come in and take a look where we live?
I thought you'd never ask.
He heard the bing of a text message and pulled out his phone. It was from the rookie.
Call me regarding Curly.
Is that from Sister?
She turned off the phone.
No, a guy I work with who thinks he's more important than he really is.
They checked him in at the front desk and entered a large furnished room with windows that looked out onto a courtyard. Darlene ran her hand along the back of a large tan sofa.
We call this the living room. It's a great place to hang out.
The muted television was tuned to an old black-and-white movie, but as far as she could tell, no one seemed to be watching. A few students sat at desks with their laptops open, and two boys played chess. He heard a phone chirp. In the kitchen area, a pretty dark-haired girl with silver earrings stood by the microwave as the smell of fresh popcorn filled the room. A boy quietly strummed a guitar in a corner.
Nice place.
I just remembered I left my clothes in the dryer. London turned toward a hallway leading away from the common space. I'll catch up with you.
They climbed the stairs to the second level, the girls' floor. I have more room here than at Mama's.
Darlene headed down the hall.
Our room is this way.
She followed her.
So what's it like having a roommate?
It's awesome. London's nice, and she has a lot of friends in Santa Fe.
Do you think you'd like to be a regular student here, studying art?
Darlene hesitated.
I like living in the dorm, but I miss Mama. I miss her cooking, the way she makes the coffee too strong. I even miss her bossing me around. But I like most of my classes, and, well...
A young man emerged from one of the rooms. He stared at his shoes and walked quickly in the opposite direction.
I thought this was a girl's floor.
Oh, that's just Charlie. He and his roommate live on the next floor. They are part of a band. Cool, huh? Loretta lives there. She's a singer with them.
Darlene paused at a door about halfway down the hall.
Give me a minute to make sure I don't have a pile of undies on the floor.
Don't worry about it.
He walked in behind her before she could protest. The room had a large window, two beds, and two desks. Unlike Darlene's space at Mama's house, it was surprisingly neat. It had nothing in common with the cramped quarters he had shared in the old dorms at the University of New Mexico. A collection of empty beer cans in a cardboard box sat at the foot of one of the beds.
Tell me about the beer.
Oh, we save all that for recycling.
She tried to shove the box under the bed, but it collided with the bed frame and made a racket.
After you drink the beer?
They don't allow drinking in the dorms. Did they when you were in college?
Nope.
She remembered that hadn't stopped anyone who wanted to drink.
Back when I was at the university, boys and girls had separate dorms, too.
London had walked up behind them.
No kidding? How retro.
Some people tried to sneak in their dates. He turned to look at her. Where's your laundry?
The towels weren't dry. Why did the dorms operate like that back in the old days?
The old days? She winced. Oh, lots of reasons. Making it harder for guys and girls to get together, for starters.
Mama told me that when she was a little kid, everybody slept together on the floor of the hogan, girls on one side and boys on the other.
Darlene smiled at the story.
Instead of beds, they used cozy sheepskins.
Chi felt his phone vibrate, and it reminded him to call Bernie. You girls behave. I've got to go. Study hard.
Don't worry so much about me, cheeseburger. I'm really okay. Thanks for dinner.
London smiled at Chi, and he realized she was pretty.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to meet you.
You too. He trotted back down the stairway to the main lobby. He found a chair in a quiet corner and looked at missed calls. Not Bernie, but one from the rookie and another from CS. Wilson Sam answered on the third ring.
I just got off the phone with Mrs. Curley. She didn't know the name of the ranch, but she said it was out by Raymond Country. She said her son came by just once while he was employed there, and that was the last time she saw him.
When was that?
About 2 weeks ago. Anyway, he told her his wife's mother had called him a lazy freeloader, and that was one reason he took the job. She thinks he went back to his wife to tell her he was leaving. And whammo!
Whammo.
Mrs. Curley thinks the wife lost it and killed him. Or maybe the mother-in-law did him in.
Does she have any proof?
He got a new pickup and bragged to her that he never missed a payment. The bill comes to her house even though he pays online. She said they sent an overdue notice. And there's something else.
She heard the chime of an incoming text message and ignored it. The rookie cleared his throat.
The mother said Curley seemed spooked by something, but he didn't want to talk about it. She thinks the wife and that Pueblo mother-in-law are behind all this. She wants me to take her to the Pueblo so she can talk to those women, find out where they are hiding him, and drag him back here.
Other than missing the payment, does she have any other reason to think he's dead?
He always calls her on Sunday mornings unless he forgets or his phone is lost or something, and he hasn't called for 2 weeks.
Wilson Sam cleared his throat.
Hey, Chi?
Yeah?
Mrs. Curley was the reason I made it through high school. I owe her. She may be a little off, but hey, who isn't? It's odd to think of her as somebody's mother.
Why? Don't tell anybody, but I had a crush on her in the 9th grade. See what you can find out about the ranch where Curley was working. I'll ask his wife about it, too.
After he disconnected, he called Bernie. She answered right away.
Hi, sweetheart. I miss you.
I miss you, too.
She sounded tired, he thought. She told him a little about Domingo Cruz and Wings and Roots.
Yeah, the captain told me Elsbeth Walker has been hounding you. There's a lot on your plate.
He heard her sigh.
Have you ever dealt with a counselor?
No. Do you think I need one?
Her laughter made him smile. She said,
I've met Walker, and I remember the lieutenant worked with her on something. He might have a suggestion for you.
I've talked to him, and he said he'd email me some information.
You're a step ahead of me. I recall now that I arrested a San Juan County commissioner's son once for DUI. He thought the kid was being unjustly persecuted, called to complain about me. Does that count as dealing with a counselor?
Nope.
Well, it gave me all the experience in that area I need, thank you very much.
Have you seen Darlene?
Yes, I just got back from dinner with her and her roommate.
How's she doing?
She thought about how to answer. Her work in the art show was beautiful, and she likes the girl she shares a room with.
You know what I mean.
She's Darlene, but basically fine. Don't worry.
Mama wants me to drive to Santa Fe and bring her back here.
Tell her if I get a feeling that this isn't the right place for her. I'll bring her back with me tomorrow.
After the phone call, he checked and found an email, something from Leaporn with the subject line, not much, and an attachment. Based on the less than promising preview, he'd open it later, back at the hotel. He envisioned the rest of his evening. After he read the lieutenant's attachment, he'd spend a few minutes reviewing the notes from the training. And before any of that, a warm shower and a cup of fresh coffee from the little in-room coffee maker. Santa Fe's high desert air greeted him with a frigid blast as he walked back to his truck. He shoved his hands in his pockets. Before opening the door to climb into the cab, he circled the vehicle, as was his habit. The rear tire on the passenger side was flat. He squatted down and used his flashlight to examine it, looking for a nail in the tread. No nail, but the cap was off the valve stem. It was no accident. Someone had jammed something in it to let the air escape. He straightened up and wiped his hands on his jeans, instantly creating a short list of suspects. C.S. and Herbert. If he'd been a man who swore, he would have had some choice words for the situation. He thought about changing the tire. No, he decided, he'd make the jerk who gave him the flat take care of it. Unlike Bernie, Chi didn't run as a regular pastime. He felt the exertion and the burning of his leg muscles and challenged to his lungs as he headed for the studio. There were no vehicles on the road. The campus was quiet. Emergency lights and call stations glowed in the darkness to help a student who got in trouble. The jog worked off some of his anger. He thought about C.S. He had liked the guy, admired the passion he had for using video to make the world a little better. He appreciated the way he included Darlene in his project about an old woman and her sheep. He remembered C.S. driving Darlene's car. Did that mean that C.S. had to be in the driver's seat in their relationship? And now C.S. was associating with a jerk who had been imprisoned for domestic violence. He had steered away from Chi's question about the bad bruise on Darlene's arm, an injury that could have been caused by a man squeezing too hard. He recalled Darlene's tears the first night he'd talked to her about it, and the way she tried to hide the bruise. If it really were an accident, as she claimed, why would she be ashamed of it? As he neared the studio building, he saw a car heading toward him. It moved more and more slowly as it approached, and it was nearly across from him before he recognized it as Mrs. Lomasi's vintage station wagon. She lowered the window and stopped. He stopped, too.
Officer Chi?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you need a ride?
No, thank you. He bent at the waist, catching his breath. Is C.S. in the studio?
Yes, always. Why are you jogging without a flashlight? It's dark out here, you know.
My truck has a flat tire, and I want to talk to C.S. about that.
I have AAA, she said. I can call somebody for you. C.S. is awfully busy.
Oh, he'll make time for me.
Maybe that big guy in the studio with him can help you.
The Navajo man.
Right, he looks strong to me.
He was glad to hear that Herbert was there, too, and glad his service weapon was with him in its holster.
You have to use the keypad to get in, Mrs. Lomasi said. They can't hear the bell from the studio. Soundproofing, you know.
She gave him the code to unlock the door before she drove off. There were five vehicles in the studio lot, including the banged-up truck he'd noticed at the restaurant the first day he saw Clyde Herbert. Chi used the moonlight to negotiate the keypad and opened the door. It was dark inside except for a flashing red beacon pulsing down the hall over the entrance to Studio 4. As he felt along the cool wall for a light switch, the flashing stopped, and he heard a door open. The glow from the studio backlit the large person walking toward him and shone through the brown glass of the beer bottle in his right hand. Chi's fingers found the light switch, and he turned it on. Then his hand moved toward his weapon. Clyde Herbert stopped.
Jim Chi, you're like a bad case of the trots, man. You keep coming back. Don't you have some cop friends to hang with?
I got a flat in the parking lot at Darlene's dorm. I was thinking you and C.S. might know something about that.
Yeah, I've had some flats, blowouts. Tires go bad, dude, even off the res, even for cops. C.S. probably don't know much about it.
Herbert made a chortling sound.
I think he rides a bike.
Chi looked at Herbert's hand.
What's with the bottle?
Herbert's attitude changed.
Nothing. It's empty. Don't worry about it.
You know, I am worried. My wife's sister is taking a class here, and she's got a big bruise she won't talk about, and went to a party where things got out of hand. And she's